Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Sports Infusion. I am your host, Pamela Michelle, joined by my co-host, Andrew Fishbane. Fish, how are you doing tonight?
You know, we love living in Southern California because it's 6 o'clock in the evening and it's 65 degrees in January. But then you realize that I left my job 2 hours ago and I'm still sitting in traffic. So, you know, it's the good but the bad at this point.
I think I would take that 2 hours of traffic, especially since it is only, are you ready for this?
I don't know if I am.
13 degrees out. 13 degrees. It is enough to make anybody long for the traffic in Southern California, that's for sure.
Well, I will say this, that I have missed you terribly, and I have missed our audience terribly these 3 weeks that we've been off. But what a way to come back. What an amazing show tonight and for the next several weeks, but especially tonight. I'm very excited.
Yeah, so today we have a really fantastic show. We do have Casey Stern coming on with us from the MLB Network. And
it's Christmas all over.
What was that?
I said it's Christmas all over again for me.
It is. It's Christmas all over again for you. We're going to be talking some hot stove with him, which is always going to be very fun, very exciting. And, of course, we have our football guru, Russell Baxter, who's going to be joining us in the next few minutes. And also, we do have our Mo Money guy coming on, Greg Smith. So we're going to have a great show.
New year, more money. And, you know, the fact that Russell has even a minute to spare to come on because, like, the head coaches were being hired fast and furious today. It was absolutely amazing.
Oh, they really are. They are really going to be, you know, Russell's going to be working overtime.
Yeah. And now before we have him on, here's my dilemma. Maybe you can help me out.
Okay.
For the past five or six years, there are certain people that you learn to hate because of their affiliations with teams. Rex Ryan is one of those people. I have despised Rex Ryan for 6 years. He was a blowhard. He was a head coach of the Jets. He couldn't do anything right. He always talked a good game but never backed it up. Now he's my coach. How am I supposed to handle that?
You know, all I have to do is say this to you, Fish, is that if anybody knows how to take a team from what the Bills have, which is a lot of raw talent, they're moving in the right direction, I believe it's Rex Ryan. I mean, he really went from basically the same team from New York just to upper state New York. So, and he did go to the playoffs with Mark Sanchez. So I'm just saying, I think that winning cures everything, and I think that there'll be a whole lot of forgiving going on as long as he's winning. And we'll ask Russell about this because he is on the phone right now with us. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome our fabulous football guru, Russell Baxter, to the show. We have missed him so, so much and can't wait to start talking some football. Russell, Happy New Year, my friend. How are you?
It's the first time I've been on all year.
I know.
I haven't talked to you in a year. Did you have
a know. I mean, I mean, it's, you know, I understand why Pam broke up with me, but Andrew?
I would never break up with you.
No,
you know my love for you runs deep, Russell.
Yes, I know. It's called a restraining order.
It certainly is. Did you have a good, happy, and safe holiday season there, my friend?
It was terrific. Spent some time with my family in New Jersey. Spent some time with other family in Long Island. It's been an interesting couple of weeks. Not to start off on a maudlin note, but I have not talked to you guys in a while. So
no.
indulge me for about 30 or 45 seconds.
Absolutely.
I had the great privilege, and I say that very, very sincerely, working with Stuart Scott. for 18 years at ESPN, and obviously, as you know, he left us far too soon, 49 years old. I mean, I consider myself a baby at 55, and Stuart was a lot of fun to work with. I worked with him on Monday Night Countdown, on NFL Primetime. You know, he left an indelible mark in this industry. More importantly, he left an indelible mark as a man and as a father. And you know, I just wanted to say that. I've had a chance to, you know, give my condolences in different venues, but I haven't had a chance to talk to you guys about it. And
right.
I don't know if you've ever had a chance to meet him. If you did, you certainly would remember it. He was a lot of fun. He was a great pro. And God's got himself a hell of a sportscaster.
No, absolutely. You know, I had the privilege of working with him for 2 years at ESPN. And, you know, usually I'm a pretty good judge of character. And when we do SportsCenter, everyone sits in a little pod, and the producer and the director and the talents are all there writing and making sure everything's there together. And when I first did my first SportsCenter with him, he was in his office writing. And my first thought was, why would this guy not come down here and be a part of the team? And I couldn't realize how wrong I was about him, because he truly is an amazing human being. He is the only one of the talents that always made sure he talked to me about saying it with the emphasis that I was looking for when I wrote it. And he's, like I said, just an amazing human being, and it is such a tragic, tragic loss.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's been a, you know, it's real life. And, I got a chance to spend, like I said, a weekly time when we used to have such great fun working on Monday Night Countdown back in the day. And obviously it's still a very, very good show. It's a lot different than it used to be, and so on. But and Fish will know this, if anybody who was at ESPN and worked on Monday Night Countdown, if you're listening out there, I'll meet you at Outback in about a half an hour. A lot of good nights at the Outback after the show with him and Mike and Sterling Sharp and Sterling, who more times than not picked up the bill. And great fun, great memories.
And there are a lot of people, don't get me wrong, who were fantastic that worked for ESPN. But Stuart Scott was a man among boys as far as I was concerned, and just an amazing, amazing human being. And I was extremely saddened by his loss.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And but as Stuart would have insisted, and as aptly put by my friends Chris Berman and Tom Jackson and so on, and, you know, he'd want to do sports, and he'd want to do the NFL, and you know, obviously missed this year on there as well. So, you know, for Stu, let's talk a little NFL.
All right, absolutely. We can definitely honor that request. So now, we've had a lot of vacancies that have been filled, and a surprising one, it seems, that, you know, we have in Denver. Russell, are you really shocked by an amicable parting of ways between John Fox and the Denver Broncos organization?
You know, I was surprised,
mm-hmm.
but I wasn't shocked, because
okay.
once you started to hear the murmurs and then you heard John Fox address it, he obviously
mm-hmm.
knew something was up. And,
yeah.
You know, he's going to, you know, there's a lot of talk out there he'll wind up with the Bears and so on, which I can't wait to see that headline in Chicago. Bears, Flat,
and a Bear.
Fox.
Now, my question is, how amicable was it really? And I say that because there was a week or two before that game, they had talked to Fox about his future, and all he said was, I'm a Denver Bronco, I'm thrilled to be a member of the Broncos, and that's the way I'm looking forward to the rest of my career here. And then for them to now read it as it was an amicable parting of ways, it sounds to me more like the Broncos are just trying to not make it look bad for John Fox.
Well, I think that's possible. I mean, listen, you know, let's think where we were a year ago at this time. You know, they're on their way to the Super Bowl. And also during that year, John had some, you know, medical problems and issues and so on. And listen, he was there 4 years. They won the division every year. They went to the Super Bowl. They kind of had their shortcomings in the playoffs two of the last 3 years, both of those at home to the Ravens and now the Colts. And it sounds like John Elway just wanted to go into a different direction. He obviously felt that John had gotten them to a certain stage and could not get them any further. And now he wants to take the next step and take it as soon as possible. And yeah, it is. Listen, we're in a league. We're in a league where in 2006, Marty Schottenheimer went 14-2 and got fired.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And now I asked Pamela this very question, and I don't know if there is a definitive answer or not, but maybe you can help me with it. She gave me the best answer.
Well, listen, if you ask Pam the question, I'm sure you've got a definitive answer, so I don't know why the hell you're asking me.
And I think the answer she gave me may be the best one I can get, but maybe you can help me out here. For 6 years, I have absolutely despised Rex Ryan, being a Bills fan and him being the head coach of the Jets. I always thought he was a blowhard. He was this. He was that. He was, you know, he was conceited. He never did what he said he was going to do. He never won the Super Bowl like he promised. And now I hear, now he is the head coach of my Buffalo Bills. The rumor I also hear is that because Mark Sanchez is a free agent, he may also be our quarterback. How does one get around the fact that for 6 years I despised this gentleman and now he's my head coach? And I'd be honest with you, I think it's a phenomenal hiring because I think he'll do a great job. But that's beside the point.
Are you on the West Coast? Go ahead, Pam.
My answer was winning cures everything.
That's very true. That's extremely true. But listen, we're talking Buffalo, so we're talking wings,
yeah.
Right?
We are talking wings, miles, however you like.
This is where I came in.
Well, no, actually, we're going to talk a different kind. We're going to talk a different kind of wings when it comes to fish here.
Okay,
because there's a certain every bird has wings, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, there's
including,
a flying fish.
Right, including crow.
Uh huh.
And I think you're going to be eating some of that fish.
I think that's very, very true.
No one circles Orchard Park now like Rex Ryan.
No, and I will say this. I do think, and there's some definitely schadenfreude here, that Mr. Doug Marrone, who ceremoniously dumped the team, and I'm not sure of all the circumstances. Obviously, I don't know what's going on the inside. I think that he thought it would be pretty easy for him to find a head coaching job. And the fact that he hasn't been able to and now may end up being just the offensive coordinator of Jacksonville, it kind of makes me smile a little bit.
Well, you know, he took a little bit of a gamble. I don't know what the inner workings were as far as the team. Obviously, that team has gone through a lot of changes in the last year or so with the death of Ralph Wilson. And I don't have to tell you, Fish, that while Mr. Wilson was certainly up there in years, he certainly always had an opinion when it came to the team still. So,
yes.
You know, it's a new day and age there as far as who's calling the shots and so on. So I don't know. If you know, listen, Jim Harbaugh is out in San Francisco. This is a business of egos, and this is a business of winning. I mean, think about this just for a second, okay? Last year's AFC and NFC title game, right?
Right.
New England and Denver, San Francisco and Seattle. New England and Seattle are back. Denver and San Francisco are looking for new head coaches.
And that brings
and
me to
or
what I...
have and I should say not San Francisco, who obviously made the announcement with Tom Sula, Jim Tom Sula today.
That was going to be my next question was, to me, that seems like a shocking hire, and I say that not because Tom Sula may not be a phenomenal coach, because he might be, but a situation like the Niners had with a roster that looked relatively stacked, and I realize they did have some issues this year, but are still a roster looks relatively stacked. You would think they would have been able to get a more experienced head coach or one with that has some gravitas. And it doesn't seem to me that Thomas Sula has that. Was there a reason behind the Thomas Sula hiring versus going after a bigger name?
I think they wanted to stay in-house. I think they wanted to stay with somebody familiar with the system. You know, obviously this is Trent Baalke's system and Trent Baalke's team as well. And I think that was exactly why they did what they did. Keep it simple. You know, promote with them, very much like the Niners, you know, for years under Bill Walsh, then promoted George Seifert. You know, George Seifert didn't come from the outside. I'm talking about gravitas.
Right.
He had to replace a guy who won 3 Super Bowls. So what did he do? He won 2 Super Bowls.
That's exactly right.
Okay. So
everybody's kind of
different in the way they do it. And it's always fascinating to watch the process and so on. I mean, when we talk about the longevity, I mean, Bill Belichick obviously has been there since 2000, Marvin Lewis since 2003. You know, Andy Reid's still the longest tenured head coach, just not with the same team. I mean, he's the only one who was hired in the 90s, 1999.
Right, I mean, obviously Coughlin's been with the Giants a while. I think Tomlin's been with the Steelers for quite a while as well.
Yeah, Tomlin since 2007, yeah. John Harbaugh since 2008. You know, it's funny, for the most part, we mentioned teams that are in the playoffs because of that longevity and the continuity. Oh, Mike McCarthy, I think, since 2006, by the way.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, I mean, that's what, you know, that was the one thing I was to point out about the AFC North and the Browns. And you wonder why the Browns are always, you know, in the basement. You know, one team had its head coach for, you know, how many seasons now? 12.
Yeah.
You know, Tomlin's been there 8. Harbaugh's been there 7.
And then every year it's a new head coach for the Browns.
And then the Browns, the Browns use a Ouija board.
Yeah.
Now, Russell, let's get into talking about a little divisional football. We've had some really interesting calls of games of what's rules, what's not rules, what's a catch, what's not a catch. Let's just dive into all of that. And let's just go with first the catch. Dez Bryant, the Dallas Cowboys, and the Green Bay Packers. For one, I had issues with these things, and this is why. I'm going to get on my soapbox for a little bit, and I will tell you why. Okay, first, I wanted that to be a catch because I do believe that Dez Bryant made a football move. I don't understand how extending your body to the goal line is not a football move, and that is my definition of what a football move is. He made it. I wanted it to be a catch for this reason. I did want the Dallas Cowboys to get that, so that way we had a couple minutes left at the end of the game, and I so badly just wanted to see Aaron Rodgers, you know, the legend, continue and grow. And I just wanted him to go down and march down that field and even get just close enough to kick that field goal to win that game, just to rip out the heart of the Dallas Cowboys, because that would make the Giants fan in me very, very happy. Now, McDonald's in Dallas, I don't know if anybody's seen this on my Twitter, but Matt Chatham from ESPN actually did retweet this. And the Dallas McDonald's took issue with this. And the Golden Arches had been running commercials, McDonald's, about, like, very inspirational billboard messages using the billboards for good. Well, they decided to use their billboard for good in Dallas and put Dez caught it. And I just thought it was hysterical and funny. And I just put the McDonald's in Dallas is not taking this personally. Dez caught it. The Golden Arches said so. And
all I want to say about the play, and I do need to feel like I need to pipe in about this, is that the correct call was made, but the rule itself is idiotic. And I felt that way when Calvin Johnson, it's called the Calvin Johnson rule, I guess, when Calvin Johnson had his touchdown taken away as well. But I can't blame the officials because they made the correct call. Now, speaking to Dean Blandino, who is one of the head of officials for the NFL, what he said was that Dez did not make a football move. That next step in reach was more forward momentum from making the catch than it was an actual football move. Now, that's obviously in the eye of the beholder.
Yeah, I mean, and I understand they can't go back and rewatch that unless it's, you know, obviously on replay. But that was as much of a football move as one could possibly make. Russell, do you think so, or do you think it was momentum?
Well, first off, Pam, I want to thank you about that thing about McDonald's. That was quite the McNugget of information.
It was, wasn't it? I try. I was trying to be more sweet than sour about it.
Oh, good Lord.
Oh, jeez. Saucy as usual. Fisher, you're spot on. It was a catch, but it wasn't a complete play, and that's really what rule. Now, I disagree. I mean, the football move, he was lunging across the end zone.
I agree with you. I think maybe Dean Blandino was only trying to save face for the NFL by saying that was the reason that they ruled it rather than saying they're wrong. And it's funny thing is after the game, Dez Bryant came out and said, I hope this week they don't tell me that they made a mistake. I would rather them have that just be ruled not a catch and let it go than have them tell me afterwards that they made a bad call.
You know, it's funny. You know, in 1971 on Christmas Day, the Kansas City Chiefs and the Miami Dolphins played in 2 overtimes, still the longest football game ever played. What people don't realize is that record was broken a couple of weeks ago by the Cowboys-Lions game, because obviously that game lasted until Tuesday. because, you know, because Monday was one note about the call and defensive holding. And then, of course,
right.
I think it was on Tuesday, we got another note talking about a holding call that was not called on Ndamukong and Suh. Now, my sources are also telling me that the NFL is going to issue a statement regarding the fact that they believe Frenchie Fuqua actually did touch the football. And
therefore, the immaculate reception is...
Yes, the immaculate reception is just a catch.
There
now.
You go.
Yeah, so, I mean, come on with this stuff. It's just, and people, you know... It is what it is. It's going to be reviewed. Oh, listen, 5 years ago, Brett Favre couldn't get in the ball in overtime in the championship
yeah.
game. Okay, it was a national tragedy. And what happened in the off season? We changed the rules. Okay.
Yeah. Well, like,
I mean, they've overturned the Tuck rule.
Do you think we're getting ready to talk about this one?
Yeah. Speaking
right.
of
yeah.
which, and that may, and I don't know if you heard it today, and it may be the dumbest thing I've ever heard an NFL player say, when Ray Lewis came out today and said, if it wasn't for the Tuck rule, we would never know who Tom Brady is.
And, when,
you know,
can I just tell you that our buddy Murph had tweeted out, and I just got to read this tweet just because I think it's very, very funny. And he tweeted this to Ray Lewis saying, hey, Ray, have a Snickers, because when you don't have food in your mouth and you're not able to speak, you sound kind of stupid. Go Pats. That was Murph's response.
Have we heard from Murph?
We have. He still tweeted
yeah,
away.
I don't know if Ray Lewis is the guy I want to be teasing. But
well, I mean, listen, I don't know the context in which he said it and so on, but listen, the Tuck rule had nothing to know about nothing to do with knowing about who Tom Brady is. If you want to say, if it weren't for Drew Bledsoe getting hurt, we wouldn't have known who Tom Brady was. I understand that, because that's
yeah.
certainly some validity.
Right.
Okay?
But my point being is, even if the Tuck rule doesn't exist and that's ruled a fumble, and the Niners don't, or the Patriots don't win that game, and the Raiders go on to the championship, et cetera, that still doesn't stop Tom Brady from winning two more Super Bowls. So one has nothing to do with the other.
Well, I don't know the context that it was said in and so on. It seems a little ludicrous to me, and you know, I don't know if he said it kiddingly or not kiddingly. The fact that, you know, again, here we go. Can you tell it's a slow week? You know, it just
yeah.
I don't understand. I don't understand who would even ask that, or why he would bring it up. And I'll go out on a limb and saying he'll probably have to address it this weekend on some TV show.
I would think so. So,
you know, but again, it doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense, because the legend of Tom Brady began when Drew Bledsoe took that shot from Mo Lewis in week two of the 2001 season. And that's,
yep.
And by the way, you know, a lot of people knew who Tom Brady was anyway. So
yeah, he was Drew Henson's backup
at
Michigan.
When you make statements like that, and you're removed from the game, and you were a player in this game, and I have no idea, guys, why you feel the need to, you know, just go down that path. It just seems silly, you know.
I mean, why even
bring it up? You know, just why even bring it up? I mean, there's so many moments. You know, we were just kidding about the immaculate reception. So, in other words,
yeah.
would the Steelers have had a dynasty if it weren't for that play turning around their fortunes and so on? I mean, it's crazy, the what if stuff.
It's ridiculous. You're right. You know,
it screams of a slow news day.
It
really does.
And ironically,
you know,
it was anything but. But let's get to the games this weekend, especially the one in Seattle.
There you go.
I think we have two excellent games. Although I fear that Belichick's rule over Luck and the Colts is going to continue. But that game in Seattle is one that really has me intrigued. And I just want your thoughts on
yeah.
the game and what, if anything, the Packers can do to win this game, or will that hamstring injury of Aaron Rodgers pretty much preclude them from winning?
Well, I don't think so. And it's the calf injury, although,
I apologize.
That's all right. That's all right. You know, I mean, if you want to accuse people of having a bad hammy, that's your problem. So, just kidding. You go back to week one, 36-16 Seattle, and you make the case, well, wait a minute, you know, Aaron Rodgers was healthy in that game. And, you know, now he's not healthy, admittedly so. You know, how do they stand a chance against a defense that has been blistering hot? But I will also say this. This is kind of a different style of offense, or an offense that has really emerged as the season has wore on. They led the league in points scored. Eddie Lacy became a bigger part of the passing game this year. And now you watch their passing attack, and it's not just Jordy Nelson and Randall Cobb, but you have to take Devontae Adams seriously as well. And not just because he had a big game this week. We've seen him with other big moments this year down in Miami.
Yeah, I was going to say that game in Miami, I think that was his coming out party almost.
Right.
The fake spike.
You know, the first game of the year, Fish and Pam, he played, but he wasn't involved in the passing game at all. So how does that change things as well? I still think this is Seattle's game. Because Green Bay's defense still scares me as far as stopping the run. And that's why I picked Dallas to beat them last week, and they didn't. But I saw DeMarco Murray have a lot of success, and Marshawn Lynch could have that success. But, you know, and listen, I got all kinds of people coming out of the woodwork about, you know, I did not call the Seattle offense. I think they're erratic, okay? I don't think they're, you know, but I think they're an erratic offense.
No,
you see them go through these droughts. I mean, my goodness, you don't say that. Don't say that to a Seattle fan.
No.
I will be venture to guess that Aaron Rodgers this week does throw at Richard Sherman.
Sure. Well, because he's going to be using some three wide receiver sets, and it will be almost impossible not to throw at him. But my point is this, is the one way you beat Seattle, because their offense is erratic or sporadic or whatever you want to call it, is to limit their possessions, because it puts more pressure on them to score. When San Diego beat them, when Dallas beat them, when Kansas City beat them, they were able to run the football against them. And last week we had a good running back matchup with, you know, Jonathan Stewart. And Carolina ran the ball on Seattle last week, 132 yards. Now you got Eddie Lacy, who is, again, part of the passing. Excuse me?
I said, who is healthy.
Yes, who is healthy, had over 100 yards last week, kind of back. I mean, do you give the ball to Eddie Lacy 30 times if necessary?
You limit the time of possession.
Starks has been running very well, too.
But Russell, what you're saying is the same thing you've been saying for the last 2 years. The way to beat Peyton Manning, or in this case, the way to beat Russell Wilson, is to keep him on the sidelines, because he's never thrown a touchdown pass from the sidelines.
Right.
Exactly.
I'm not necessarily sure, though, it's Russell Wilson. I think it's more Marshawn Lynch. Keep Marshawn on the sidelines.
Well, I think it's their unit. I think it's their unit in general. Right.
Yeah.
It's their unit in general. But my bigger point is, you're not keeping him on the sidelines because you're afraid that every time they have the football that they could put points on the board. You fear that with New England. You fear that with Green Bay. You fear that, you know, with Philadelphia to a degree this year. You don't fear that with the Seattle Seahawks. But because they are sporadic, because they are a little inconsistent, if they have 8 or 9 possessions instead of 12 or 13, it puts more pressure on them to get points from those. I mean, you look at the way they blew out Arizona and scored 35 points. I totally understand that. But for the most part, down the stretch, you know, they won a couple of 19-3 games. They won a 17-10 game. So, I mean, people get insulted. You must be watching something different. I mean, 17 is 2 touchdowns and a field goal, not 17 touchdowns.
Absolutely. And, Russell, once again, you've hit the nail on the head. I look forward to speaking to you next week when we know who the Super Bowl participants are, and we'll have a full week of prep and pomp and circumstance before we have to think about the actual prep of the game. Why don't you tell everybody where we can find your work, what you've been working on this week, and what's coming up in the near future?
Well, Bax Football Guru, you can find me on Twitter, you know, playoff previews for Bleacher Report. Doing a lot of stuff now with NFL Spin Zone, which is a part of FanSided. I'm doing not only some writing, but editing with them as well. So you'll see a lot more of me on there, and of course Sports Blog, and pardon me, End Zone Score, and you know, I'm doing a lot more stuff for the site as well. But you know, when the dust clears, we didn't get to talk about the other game. I think it's New England and Seattle.
Yeah,
I think that you're probably right. Unfortunately, Russell, thank
well,
you once
Bills
again.
The Bills can't make the playoff. The
no,
Super Bowl
not
this
year, but next year they will. And mark my words.
Absolutely,
Russell, thank you so much. And I hate to try to rush you. We do have our next guest coming on, so you know, and that's why we had you on a little bit early so we could keep.
No,
talking.
That's okay. Tom, I said hello, and next week we'll talk about my frozen plunge. Next week too, okay?
Yes.
I like the tease.
Well, you don't hear that every day.
No. Thank goodness. Thank
Russell,
you so
thank
much,
you
Russell.
So much.
All right, guys, have a good week.
You too.
Bye-bye. Ladies and gentlemen, that was our football guru, Russell Baxter. We are actually going to get our next guest on our call line, and that is brought to you by our friends at Fansetters Magazine. Of course, you can follow them on Twitter at Fansetters Magazine. They are the official magazine for the Super Bowl and the Pro Players Network. We are going to call our guest Casey Stern.
And the official magazine of Sports Infusion. So
yes.
It's...
Hello.
It is my pleasure at this time to introduce our next guest, who is one of the busiest men in all of sports. He does the most incredible show on the MLB radio network on SiriusXM Inside Pitch with his co-host Jim Bowden. It is my pleasure to introduce Casey Stern. Casey, thank you for joining us this evening.
What's going on? Always a pleasure. How you doing?
Good. And
we're
yourself?
Doing fantastic. Thank you.
I'm doing very, very well. It's cold here in New York, but luckily the snow this winter hasn't been too bad, so it'll be spring training before we know it.
Hey, I won't tell you that it's only 62 degrees here in Southern California, so other partner, I get the good end of it.
Well, you know, LA people, I was going to say LA people complaining about the cold this winter is it's always frustrating for us who are actually dealing with the south of freezing temperatures with some of you people complaining about the 60s, but it's all right.
Yeah, but you know what, though? They get the bad end of it because he was stuck in 2.5 hours worth of traffic, so now I don't feel so bad.
Yeah, well, that's the 405 freeway is America's favorite parking lot.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
And it's funny because I had so much that I wanted to talk to you about. But then, of course, on my way home, Billy Beane made yet another deal. And I'm sure you've heard of it so already, the Yunel Escobar for Tyler Clippard deal. And my question to you to begin with is, do you think this is a precursor to a deal for Ian Desmond now so they can slip Escobar in at short?
Well, I think it very well could be. I don't think they're forced to do that because Desmond's in his final year. I think, look, they understand they're not re-signing Desmond. So you've got Escobar, you've got Trey Turner, who's going to be a guy who they probably have as shortstop long-term in the future, who they got in that three-way trade that involved Will Myers from the Rays going to the Padres. I think Turner will be the guy in 2017. So I think they're probably a year shy before you're going to be able to pass the torch. So I think what Escobar does is, he gives you your second baseman now if Desmond is there. If you can find a good trade for Desmond, you end up putting Escobar at short. If Desmond stays this year and lives out the rest of his contract, then at least you have a bridge for 1 year of Escobar moving to shortstop next season before you have to force Trey Turner, who's still sitting there in his teen years. So I think it helps them really more next year than this year. I do think there's a chance to move Desmond, but the unfortunate thing is the team that probably is the most needy for him, which was looking at Desmond just about a couple of weeks ago, was the New York Mets. In division, you rarely see those deals happen. It would take a lot for that to go down. That's why it was part of a three-team trade. So I don't know necessarily that Desmond gets moved, but if he does, I think in division, the New York Mets would be the team that I would watch.
Now, and I completely agree with you, and that was going to be my next question. I know that you are a big Mets guy anyway, and I've always wondered this to begin with, and I know this is a big Steve Phillips thing that prospects get you fired. Why does it seem the Mets are so scared to trade a Noah Syndergaard? And I say that, I precursor that by saying, prior to last year, Jacob deGrom was a basic unknown, at least to most of us. And he came up, and I think he did much better than anybody expected. So you had him, you had Wheeler, you have Harvey, and you still have, obviously, Nice and Dylan G and Bartolo Colon. So the need for Syndergaard isn't as great. And to get a guy like Desmond, who could be that missing piece, especially with how bad now the Braves have become, how bad the Phillies are, shouldn't it behoove the Mets to make that move as soon as they can, if that's the thing that's going to hold them up?
Well, here's the thing. I agree with the premise of don't hoard your prospects, which is, I think, what the Texas Rangers have done, unfortunately, the last number of years with John Daniels and other teams have, and that is to fall in love with your own guys so much you don't realize when you should pounce on a deal and trade from your depth and your excess. The problem is Ian Desmond's a one-year player. So, you know, in today's market, when you look at Ian Desmond, he's not the greatest player that anybody's ever seen, but shortstop position is very weak right now. You've got Troy Tulowitzki, who's obviously the guy everybody knows is the best. After that, Andrelton Simmons defensively is by far the best, but offensively he's challenged. You look at Elvis Andrus and some others that, you know, we kind of like in different ways. Desmond's arguably the third or fourth best shortstop in baseball. Based on the numbers, offense and defense combined the last couple of years, when he gets out to free agency at the end of the year, he's going to make a lot of money and get overpaid by somebody. So Desmond's agent's not going to let him go sign with the Mets before he goes to free agency. So it's not do you trade Noah Syndergaard, do you trade a prospect. It's do you trade it for 1 year of a player who very well might go somewhere else and be outbid for you, because this isn't the Yankees, it's the New York Mets. And don't forget, the New York Yankees might look at Ian Desmond come free agency at the end of the year. So I think the problem is the idea of trading Syndergaard to go if it's worth it is right. But for Desmond for a year, it's probably not, because if you're going to give up a prospect like that for a one-year player, you better have a chance to win the World Series in that year. And the Mets would not be a World Series contender even with Ian Desmond.
And on the other half of the Yunel Escobar deal, obviously, is Tyler Clippert going to the A's, which, A, weakens the Nationals, and I'm not so their bullpen, which had been a strength, so I'm not so sure how good that is. But, B, Tyler Clippert, is it I don't see the A's paying $9 million for a setup guy, which is basically what Clippert is, because Doolittle is going to be their closer. Do you think that now Billy Beane is once again going to stay in that revolving door and then Clippert now gets dealt somewhere?
I mean, it's possible. I mean, this guy's got closer stuff and could, you know, close for a weaker team if they needed it. It's possible. It seems like Toronto certainly could use some help in the back end of the bullpen. The Jays are a team that I would think Rafael Soriano probably ends up on if Casey Jansen doesn't get back there, but Clippert would be interesting. You know, it's possible. You never know. I mean, let's not forget, last year they made a trade to bring Jim Johnson in and were paying him $10 million to close there for 1 year. So nothing really Billy Beane does make sense. I love him personally. His track record is great, but the guy's certifiably nuts. So, you know, he disbanded his team 3 years ago and then spent $36 million on Cespedes, who no one had ever seen. Then he went last year, put $10 million on 1 year of Jim Johnson. Then he went this year, and after getting rid of a number of players, including Samardzija, gave $30 million to a DH in Billy Butler. Then he traded away players and then added some more in the Zobrist deal and then traded some more again. It doesn't really make any sense. So I don't necessarily play the game of let's try and figure out what Billy Beane is doing. But, yes, I do think there are probably some teams who would make calls for Clippert. What I would say is there are also teams who would make calls for Doolittle now and say, hey, look, since you have Clippert in tow, he comes off the books in a year, why not trade Doolittle? They have Doolittle locked up long-term to very cheap money. I think a lot of teams would be much more willing to give a lot of risk and reward for him than they would for a Clippert.
And that would actually fit in with Bean's MO of getting maybe three or four young guys and just restocking, because he figures if you get four guys, if one of them hits, it becomes a great deal at that point. Next question I had, I, obviously, it's no secret on this show anyway that I'm a huge Dodger guy, and I'm not necessarily thrilled nor disappointed with all the moves they've made, but the one that puzzled me was the D. Gordon deal was great because I loved getting Andrew Haney. I don't understand why they would turn around and deal Haney to the Angels for Kendrick when they had a guy like Alex Guerrero who they're paying all this money to. It's now his second year I think it was a four-year deal, so they have to play him at some point, and he is a second baseman. Why make the deal for Haney, who could be a young pitcher they could control for years?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't like that either. I thought the idea of that deal when I saw it was that they were going to put Haney as a guy to grow with Kent, with Kershaw. in this rotation, because don't forget Greinke could opt out after next year. So I didn't really understand that either. I hated the McCarthy signing. 4 years is way too much. Brett Anderson's got really high-level potential, but you don't give $10 million to a guy who can't get on the field every 5 days. So I think both of those things are interesting. I asked Farhan Zaidi, the GM of the Dodgers, this afternoon about both of those moves, and he said that obviously in that case they felt like to get those two players they needed to overpay, so they did. I didn't like either move. Could pan out, but I wasn't a fan of either. So, yeah, I think it's confusing. The one thing I know for sure, whether or not Kendrick stays beyond this year or not, is that they do not trust Alex Guerrero. They paid $28 million for him. Obviously, the situation with Olivo, with the crazy ear-biting thing that made him, you know, not be able to come back late last season and maybe get on the big league field. But this is a guy who they're not overly impressed with. Otherwise, they wouldn't have made this move. The one thing I can say to the positive is that they are much better defensively up the middle. When you have Kendrick and Rollins, and you go look at what they had with Gordon and Hanley Ramirez, they are a much, much better defensive team up the middle. So when their pitchers, and they have top-flight pitchers like Kershaw, Greinke, and Ryu, are on the mound, and they get a ground ball, they've got a much better chance up the middle to get the double play to win the game than they would have had the last couple of years.
I completely agree with that assessment. Next question is about Cole Hamels. Obviously, the world knows he needs to be dealt. Obviously, Ruben Amaro, this is a deal that he has to win if he does indeed deal him. Is it easier for a team to try to get Hamels if they're willing to eat a contract like a Jonathan Papelbon or part of a Ryan Howard contract so they wouldn't have to give up as much? Is that even a possibility, or is it, no, you're going to have to just take Hamels and give us what we want as far as your best prospects, and we'll deal with the rest of it later?
Well, I mean, it's two separate things. Yes, it's easier, because if they take Howard, I think the Phillies will give up or take less in terms of prospects for Hamels in the trade to get rid of Howard's money, or Papelbon, more likely Howard. So, yes, I think that makes sense. I don't think this is ever easy. The one thing that, you know, we talk about on our show all the time with these deals, like with a Cole Hamels, you only get to make this mistake or to kill it once. You only get to either get an A or get an F, and that's it. I mean, this trade's either going to really work or not, and you get one chance to do it. Hamels is not a free agent right now. He's on this team. They could play him opening day, and, yeah, it's a risk. He could get hurt, but he's not even a free agent at the end of next year. So they could sit there at the deadline and play with Hamels. They could play with him next offseason if they want. I'm not saying they're not trying to trade him, because they are. But one of the reasons why the Red Sox have not traded for Hamels yet is because the Phillies want to make sure that Mookie Betts is in the deal. Now, the Red Sox are not going to do that. But the point here is that as bad as Ruben Amaro has been at times, even he knows that if he's going to make this Hamels trade now, he's got to have somebody overpay. So what I think will happen is Scherzer ends up going back to Detroit most likely, because nobody's there in that marketplace to pay him. Shields ends up in Texas or with the Marlins. And then you get into a case of it's the Red Sox and Cole Hamels doing a dance. Because if he gets traded, the most likely team that he would end up on between now and opening day, in my opinion, would still be Boston.
Now, if Scherzer does indeed sign in back in Detroit, does that put Detroit in the market saying, you know what, now we have Scherzer back, we can trade David Price? Or do they need to keep Price in the rotation for this last year of his contract to make that one more run? Because Verlander still, God knows what happened to him, and Anibal Sanchez, obviously, his health is very iffy as well.
No, they would definitely take a shot with Price. They would do this because this is their window. Miguel Cabrera, we've seen start to break down. Victor Martinez, they just got back in tow for another number of years, but we know he's still getting up in age. Verlander, we don't know what he's got left, 1,800 innings over the last 4 or 5 years. This is their window. They have a chance, if Scherzer is back in there, to have enough of a rotation with Sanchez and Verlander, even the way he is now. With the bullpen as shaky as it is, they have a chance to go win the division, be right in the thick of things again. And they have to take shots at this thing. So, barring something unforeseen where guys get injured and they become a terrible team, and they move Price in July, which they could do that, I don't think there's any chance they would move David Price. But I do think that Max Scherzer probably ends up back in Detroit. I always thought the Yankees, but nobody is playing the game with Scott Boras right now. And unless Scott can get an owner, and I mean directly, try and get an owner to overpay, and those kind of owners would be Houston, maybe trying to sell to him that that's the franchise changer, this is the first guy for you. Maybe it's a team like Arizona, and he sits there and he goes right to Tony La Russa and has a conversation. There may be a mystery team, but I still think it's most likely that either the Yankees write the check or the Tigers bring him back.
I think you're spot on there. And I know the Hall of Fame was a couple of weeks ago. I had two things that, to me, were huge travesties that I just want your opinion on.
Sure.
One, that Carlos Delgado was a one-and-done guy. Not saying that he was necessarily worthy of the Hall of Fame, but he was worth a hell of a lot more than being one-off on the ballot. And two, is something that Randy Johnson is also stumping for. I'm a huge Edgar Martinez fan. The fact that they named the Best Designated Hitter Award after him, and he's still not even getting close to the Hall. A, is there any chance Edgar gets in? And B, is there anything that can be done for Delgado? Because I thought that was an absolute travesty.
Yeah, you know, there's nothing that can be done for Delgado. Unfortunately, the stupidity of what goes on with the Hall of Fame, a large part of it, got exposed this year. It was a rare year where you had a lot of guys who were deserving. I sat there, I said on our show, I mean, arguably there were 15 guys that you could argue are Hall of Famers. I'm not saying they're all in or deserved it, but literally all were conversation guys, and you only had 10 that you could put on the ballot. That's a little ridiculous. So because of that, Delgado didn't get the 5%. Is he a Hall of Famer? He's not. Should he have probably ended up more in the 15-20% category? Should Gary Sheffield not been at 10 and more closer to 20? Yes. You know, should Tim Raines and Lee Smith and Alan Trammell, guys in their last couple of years, have gotten more percentages? Yes. All of this didn't happen because of the limit of 10. So, you know, unfortunately, there's nothing that Carlos can do, but 473 home runs, terrific career, very good player, consistent player, not a great defender. It hurt him that he was in Canada for a lot of that time because unfortunate that he just didn't get the attention. He plays for the Dodgers for all those years with 30-100 kind of a seasons, and I think he get a lot of attention. He did it for 9 years straight. As far as the other part is concerned, I love Edgar Martinez. You know, Randy Johnson, Pedro Martinez, and Mariano Rivera, three Hall of Fame pitchers, have all said he's the toughest hitter that they faced during their era. I do think that Edgar Martinez and David Ortiz belong in. They should be the first two DHs. We saw Frank Thomas play a DH at times in his career. Paul Molitor, who's a Hall of Famer, DH at times in his career. This is not anything to be ashamed of. Baseball doesn't believe in the DH. They should take it out of the game, which I'd be okay with. They're never going to do that. So if it's part of the game, we should look at the Hall of Fame that way. It just takes time. It took closers a long time to get in. In the NFL, it took them a long time to recognize that punters or kickers even exist. I think we've seen that now as Ray Guy and others will start to open that door. So I think in this sport the same way. It might take Edgar another 3-4 years, but I do believe that Edgar Martinez and David Ortiz will both be in as the first two DHs to make the Hall of Fame.
I like the way you think. Okay, so we're about 35 to 37, give or take, days away from pitchers and catchers reporting. Before, in between now and then, give me one surprise move you think is going to happen in baseball that's going to take people. People are going to go, wow, I didn't see that happening.
Well, you know, I don't know how many surprises can happen only because I think the only guys who will move will be possibly Hamels in a trade. I mean, if I could give you a surprise, it would be that the Phillies have Cole Hamels as their opening day starter. I would not be surprised if he doesn't get traded. The only teams that are going to sit there and overpay for him are going to be San Diego or Boston. L.A. could make a trade for him. They're not going to. There are other teams who could be in play. Could the Tigers try and take a shot at him? I don't think they're strong enough in their prospect system. The Yankees would love to take a shot at him. I don't think they're strong enough in their prospect system. So if I had to pick a surprise, it would be that Hamels would end up back in Philadelphia. But I think both of the teams with James Shields are surprises to some. Everybody thought he'd end up on the Red Sox. I think he'll either be a Texas Ranger or Miami Marlin.
I am just in awe of your knowledge and having you on. It has been an absolute pleasure. Why don't you tell everybody where they can follow you on Twitter and where they can listen to you 5 days a week on what I consider the best show on radio.
Well, thank you. And the only one I'm in awe of is my 8-month-old baby. Other than that, I'm not worth that, but appreciate the sentiments and thank you. It's fun to be on as always. You can find me on MLB Network Radio on Inside Pitch Monday through Friday, 2 through 6 on the East during the season. I'm on Saturdays as well, 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern. I also do the pregame for the NFL for NFL Radio every Sunday, including this championship Sunday, 9 a.m. to noon Eastern. We'll have guests and players and all sorts of stuff from both of the games, so you can catch me there as well.
Fantastic. I can't thank you enough, and TBS better be smart enough to have you back, because I got to tell you, you were absolutely phenomenal. I know it was your first run at doing TV and doing the and hosting the pregame for the playoffs. You were fantastic. You and Gary Sheffield and Pedro had great chemistry. It was a lot of fun to watch. You do a phenomenal job. You and Jim Bowden also, tremendous chemistry. They know what they're doing over that MLB network there.
Well, thank you, and I will be at TBS for the next 2 years at least, so I will be back there on the same spot in October.
Fantastic, Casey. I hope to be able to have you on again some point during the season. It has been fantastic, and don't worry, I will be listening again tomorrow, because I listened today, and I have my guilty pleasure songs too, so I know what's going on.
Anytime you have me on, love what you guys do. Have a great night. Happy New Year to you and your families. We'll talk again soon, okay?
Thanks. Thank you so much, Casey. Take care.
All right, thank you.
Take care.
You.
Bye-bye. And, of course, that was Casey Stern.
And I need to apologize to you, Pam. I need to apologize and thank you, Pamela, for allowing me just to completely dominate that conversation.
I have a
smile ear to ear right now because, as you know, baseball is my passion, my love. Next to my wife, my daughter, and my dogs, and you, it is baseball. So.
Yes, of course. Well, I mean, you have to have your priorities right, and it is completely okay. I do want to, you know, remind everybody that this show is sponsored in part by Trendsetter to Trendsetter Magazine. You can go follow them at T2T Magazine on Twitter. Of course, you can always go visit the website at www.trendtotrend.com. And, of course, they have two other publications that we are proud to be associated with, and that is Latino Trendsetters. Fish, please don't do the
accent.
I knew he had to. And, of course, Fan Centers Magazine, which is the official magazine of
Woo!
The Pro Players Network.
Yeah, I was being fan, and if they had Jewish trendsetters, they would be, oi! Sorry.
We are waiting now.
It's a good thing there's no Canadian trendsetters, because you don't want me to bust out that Canadian accent again.
No, I do not. I have a very funny feeling, though, it would not sound too far-fetched from the Mexican one. I'm just saying. I have that slight feeling. I'm not too sure about that, but I would bet money on it. Speaking of betting money,
look at that segue. See that? New year, great segue. Phenomenal.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I personally would like to thank Pamela Michelle. I'd like to thank the listeners of Sports Infusion for listening to our show and being a very big part of why we do what we do.
I thought you were thanking yourself for a second there. I thought you said, I want to thank Pamela Michelle.
I
was like, okay, she's thanking herself.
Yeah. You didn't get it,
did you? I want to thank you, too. What the hell? Why not?
you didn't get it, did you?
No.
No? Fish. Oh, my gosh. Today, at a press conference dismissing John Fox, John Elway got up there, and he said, I would like to thank John Elway.
Oh, I didn't realize that. See, believe it or not, even though I work at the NFL.
He got up there in the first, 10 seconds of the press conference. He's like, thank you all for coming. I would just like to say I'd like to thank John Elway. John Fox.
Oh, my God, John. It's bad enough your teeth are the size of a horse's teeth.
It was gold, and my joke just completely because you were working, and, of course,
ironically, at the NFL Network.
Yeah. I'm sure it's on YouTube by now. I mean, Twitter was all abuzz, and I know you don't do the Twitter that often.
No, I don't do the tweets
because I'm
too busy.
To
I can't do the tweets. I'm too busy telling kids to get off my lawn.
Yeah, exactly. But, yes, at the press conference today, at the presser today, John Elway did say first he would like to thank John Elway, and then he realized he thanked himself and really meant to say, I would like to thank John Fox.
Part of me thinks that he didn't really mean to say he wanted to thank John Fox. Part of me thinks that he knew exactly what he was saying, and he really wanted to thank John Elway.
Yeah, John Elway wanted to basically thank John Elway, and so that's kind of what I was going for, and hopefully you will, as the listeners, got it. You people that are very interactive on Twitter.
All right, I'll tell you what. Let's try that joke again now.
Okay. All right. We'll rewind this. Okay. So
okay, go
right
ahead.
Now, speaking of Mo Money, we are going to have our Mo Money guy on, Greg Smith, and he is going to give us a little bit of the betting lines for this weekend's football. Of course, we're big into college hoops, and I just would like to say, you know, I would like to thank Pamela Michelle. He indulges
me. I get it, because John Elway thanked himself.
Right, because John Elway thanked himself.
Was that better?
That was much better, thank you.
Oh, good, okay.
Oh, my gosh. I'm going to have to ask Greg if he would like to thank Greg Smith and see if he gets it. That'd be pretty
funny. He probably will. He's much smarter than I am.
I wouldn't exactly say that, although he had made quite a few of our listeners some extra cash for holiday spending over the season.
I have not talked to him about this yet, and I actually have been bad. I owe him a phone call. But I will be willing to bet you right now on the air that he was smart enough to take Ohio State in the national championship game, and I was dumb enough to take Oregon.
Really?
Yeah, I will guess that he said that he went with Ohio State, and I know that he'll be honest. I know that he will be absolutely honest with who he took. But my guess is that he was smart enough to take Ohio State, not Oregon, like I did.
Now, was the Oregon really my influential doing? Because
no, I thought Oregon was going to dominate regardless. It didn't matter if they were playing Alabama or Ohio State. I thought Oregon was taking the national title, period, especially after the way they looked against FSU. Now, granted, FSU, I thought was a paper champion anyway. They had no business being there. I thought, you know, they were the first undefeated team, I think, to win 7 games by 6 points or less. So I didn't think they deserved to be there. But after the way Oregon played in that game, I thought they were going to run Ohio State out of the stadium. I was going to say gym, but it's not really a gym.
Yeah, I thought so too. And I think it was just because the win over FSU was so dominant and so impressive. And you know, the thing is that I'm in love with that Oregon offense, just the way they run it. It's so fast and smooth and slick when everything
like
is firing the way it's supposed to.
See, I was making a duck joke.
Yeah, just like a duck bill, exactly.
Yeah.
But, you know, they're going to have to let this kind of roll off their backs and not drag it into the next season.
That's good, although I think they're going to have a tough time without Marcus Mariota. But although I don't think Mariota is going to make a great NFL quarterback either, because generally the last great Oregon quarterback to leave for the NFL was the number 3 overall pick by the Cincinnati Bengals, and we all know how good Akili Smith was.
Yeah, well, did you see that I had seen little bits and pieces as I was going through my timeline, and I don't know how much truth to this rumor, but the Philadelphia Eagles are really looking to trade considerably up in the draft right now to get Mariota. And,
well, that makes sense. That just makes sense because of who their coach is.
Yeah, exactly. They're looking to trade up and basically kind of mortgage the farm, so to speak, on this, just because, you know,
they could trade
Tampa
for the
Bay
Bills.
Has already
oh, wait,
said that,
the Bills don't have a pick.
Yeah, Mariota is not in their game plan. Mariota is not in the game plan for the Bucs. So anybody
which makes
who
no
has
sense
because
that's another team that desperately actually needs a quarterback. I don't know who they're going to go after.
Jameis
I personally,
Winston.
Much, I about to say, oh, don't. It, see, that's a joke, right?
No, it's not a joke, actually.
Last year, you and I came out and said that the best quarterback in last year's draft was going to be Derek Carr. And we still believe that, and I think that although Bridgewater was very good, I still believe it. I will go out on a limb this year and say the best quarterback coming out of this draft is going to be Brett Hundley.
You know what? I don't disagree with that. And, you know, the thing is that I think – if this is actually true and the rumors are true and the Eagles are looking to kind of shelve maybe Nick Foles to be their number 2 or at least have him and then have Mariota as the backup, I think that that's probably one of the better bets that they could do. But it's just going to be so tough. I don't see, other than Philadelphia, and I only say this because, obviously, Chip Kelly was Marcus Mariota's coach. That is going to be the best designed system for him to be in.
Yes, that I was going to say that will be the only
yeah.
team that Mariota could go to that he has a chance to succeed, because Chip Kelly knows his strengths and weaknesses. Obviously, he recruited the kid; he knows all about him. I completely agree
right.
with that.
That's his best chance, basically, for survival. And just because there's very few teams that are going to do what Seattle has done with Russell Wilson, and that is not a knock on Russell Wilson. There's really not a whole lot I don't like about who Russell Wilson is, but the way Seattle's offense is designed, it's perfect. It is perfect for his skill set. It's perfect for the way that their game plan is. Russell Wilson does not have to do a whole lot.
Russell Wilson has to be a little bit more than what
yeah.
Trent Dilfer was for the Ravens the years that they won. And he is a little bit more. He actually doesn't
yeah.
have to be. He only has to be, with that running game and that defense, he only has to be Trent Dilfer, which means he
right.
just can't lose the game by make mistakes. It just so happens that he is better than that, and that's not a knock on Dilfer. Dilfer did exactly
no.
what he was supposed to do
as
a QB in the NFL.
I don't mean it as a knock on Russell Wilson either, because Russell Wilson makes very good choices. His choices that he makes really, you know, he doesn't make mistakes very often. He doesn't make bad mistakes very often. And that also is
no,
a recipe
for success.
No,
he absolutely doesn't. I think that's an excellent call by you. That's the greatest thing about Russell Wilson. You know, like I said, it helps when you have a Marshawn Lynch to go with a Christian
right.
Michael and a Robert Turbin in your backfield. It helps when you have a defense, which I still think is a little overrated, but I'm the only person that may think that, and I really hope that the Packers expose them this week.
You know,
which
I just
why I can't
want the
wait
drama.
To...
That's all I want, Fish. I want the drama. I don't know if it's just the diva in me. I don't know if it's the woman in me that just embraces chaos and wants the chaos. But I want Green Bay to go in there, and I want them to step all over Seattle, and I want the tale of Aaron Rodgers to grow. I want
the legend
to get bigger.
That's why
I wanted that catch so badly. It really is, and that is the reason why. And I wasn't the only one who thought so. A couple of our colleagues had thought so, too. I wanted that Dez Bryant catch to be true. I wanted it to be a touchdown just so Aaron Rodgers could go down the field and just win that game.
Why is it so important to you to have the legend of Aaron Rodgers grow?
It's just the drama. Do you know, it really is.
There was drama anyway. The fact that he dropped it was
drama. Yeah, it was, but it was the wrong kind of drama. I wanted it to be like sort of a fairy tale-ish type of thing. And I just think it's just, maybe I want this tale of Aaron Rodgers to grow just because I think it's a fantastic story about, it's almost like one of those stories you rock in your rocking chair, you know, 40 years from now and tell your grandkids that you saw a guy win a game on one leg.
Yeah, but he's not really on one leg. But I understand your point, which is why I can't wait. That's why I want to have Greg Smith on, because I want to hear him break down.
He is on right now, actually.
That's why I can't wait.
We're gonna get a little bit deeper into this right now. Everybody, please welcome back for our new year of Sports Infusion our Mo Money guy, Mr. Greg Smith. Greg, thank you so much for joining the show.
Hi, can you guys hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah,
and Greg,
oh, yeah.
Before we get started, I said this earlier, you weren't on yet, I don't know if you were listening, I owe you a huge apology, because I know you called me, I was supposed to call you back, and I had not called you back yet, and I apologize first and foremost.
Fish, don't worry about it.
And second, we have a bet going, and I need you to answer on this, and you have to answer honestly, because I know that you're a stand-up guy, and you'll answer honestly. In the national championship game, who did you have?
Ohio State.
Yeah.
What did I tell you? And that was what I said, Greg, was I said, Greg is obviously much smarter than I am, and I will prove it, because I know in the national championship game, while I was so sure, so damn sure Oregon was going to run all over him, that I know he took Ohio State because I knew he knew better. And, of course, you were right.
Well, I'm 0 for 2 right now on college basketball tonight, so I am wrong. And but I did love that bet. I loaded up on that game. I don't normally do that, but it was one of those. To me, it was a classic last year's Super Bowl. It was offense against a defense, and you give defenses enough time to to plan a good offense, you're going to come out ahead 9 times out of 10, in my opinion, and in what history has repeated itself over and over.
Now, and I totally get that, but my thinking was, A, Oregon, and I know that Florida State was a paper champion and really didn't deserve to be there, but they looked so good against Florida State. B, the quarterback for Ohio State was the third-string quarterback that Alabama, granted, had no tape on, but Oregon then had tape on from that game, so they should have been able to slow them down. I did not expect them to be able to run all over Oregon like they did, and it's because I didn't count on the Midwest big, beefy offensive linemen just throwing the defensive players for Oregon out of the way.
Yeah, and I admit, I was a little bit skeptical on the third-string quarterback as well, Jones. But the thing is that Alabama had film on them too during the Big 12 championship, Big 10 championship, and they didn't have much success either. I was a little skeptical with it, but I saw a quote that Saban had after the game, and he said that on film, of course, he has never faced the other two quarterbacks, but he said on film he thought that he was the best out of three. So I kind of took that to a little bit of a consideration. And gave the guy the benefit of the doubt to think that, hey, so far so good. The guy's winning the Big Ten championship, and he turns out to win the semifinals, and then he's heading to the national championship. Kudos to that kid.
Yeah, not a bad start to your college career, but it's kind of all downhill from there, isn't it?
Well, I guess. I will tell you this. One of the three quarterbacks is going to transfer.
Braxton Miller actually, I believe – he already has transferred to Boston College, or I don't know if that is one of the places he's considering, but I've heard a lot of strong Boston College rumors for Braxton Miller.
I have not confirmed that, though, yet. I know that was
okay.
A spot, and also down south in Florida was a spot, too, but I didn't know if he had confirmed that yet.
That's very interesting. Now, I'm sorry, Pamela, go ahead, because then I'll get onto more pressing things.
I was just going to say, I believe that the quarterback was thinking about declaring for the draft after just like a small sampling of games from Ohio State.
You talking about Jones, the third quarterback?
Yeah.
Jones?
Yeah.
He's also the idiot that tweeted, "Hey, I'm a quarterback. I'm a football player. We don't go to school for football. I shouldn't have to go to class." So, as great as he may have been on the field, he's not the sharpest knife in the drawer. He's a couple of French fries short of a Happy Meal, if you know what I mean.
I know the media took off with that whole thing saying that after three games, but that won't that would be pretty stupid if he did that.
Yes, it would. Okay, so looking forward to this weekend's games. This Sunday, obviously, the two championship games. One of them I see is a 7.5-point spread, and that's the Packers over the Seahawks over the Packers, and the Patriots are a 7-point favorite over the Colts. I know who I like in both of those games. I want your thoughts.
Well, I'm really concerned about Rodgers' leg. Did not look good. As a matter of fact, I had Dallas as my best bet on that one last week, and I actually was smiling ear to ear as I started watching him limp more and more.
You won because they covered. It was 6.5. So
yeah, that's not how I was smiling. I don't want him to hurt. But what I'm saying is that's a big key to Rodgers' arsenal is being able to extend the play and get outside the pocket. And if he can't do that effectively, because he did not want to leave the pocket at all during the Dallas game last week, if he can't do that, that's going to be a big, big problem, especially against that defense of Seattle.
Yeah, because there were also some windows that he threw in that last touchdown that he threw to Rodgers, that window that he threw in there against the Cowboys, that very same throw against the Seahawks is an interception, not a touchdown.
But yeah, and there were times where he was forced outside the pocket, but there were clearly times where he could have taken off and got 10-15 yards, and he stayed in the pocket. As a matter of fact, it cost him a couple of sacks and even a fumble that got recovered. This is a problem for me. I'm going to sit back and watch and see what I hear about news. I don't want to guess on anything, but if this leg is not better, they're going to have a heck of a time trying to beat Seattle.
I agree. The couple of good things is, A, he did practice a little bit today, which is good, because if he was that bad, he wouldn't have practiced. And B, the fact that the game, although there was a hole in the roof, for all intents and purposes, is indoors a lot of the way, too. So it's not going to be, 10 degrees, which is never going to be good for the old calf there. It's going to be probably between 45 and 50 degrees at game time.
Yeah. There's some good parts to this equation, no doubt about it. I mean, Green Bay has yet to beat those guys. They've lost three in a row, I believe, up there in Seattle. So you know, there's a little bit of familiarity with Rodgers in that spot. But again, that leg is going to be a concern for me, especially when you sit back and you have to put some weight on that back leg to throw. It's going to be a concern.
No, I agree, and I will say in favor of the Packers is Eddie Lacy is running better, I think, than he ever has, and is a more important part of the offense than he ever has been. I really like the Packers plus the points. They may not win the game, but I like them plus the points, where in the other game, I really like New England minus the points because Belichick owns Andrew Luck, unfortunately.
Well, I have a little bit of a situational a pattern play here on this one. You know, teams in the playoffs that are contrarian, that are basically going against the public. So right now we're at 38%, 62% with New England. Teams that are at 40% or below that are 5.5-point dogs or higher are 18-5 against the spread dating back to 2004. So that's something to be very aware of. Heading into Sunday, I agree with you. I think Belichick and Brady, this might be their time to go. But the Colts are gonna come out and play hard. And with that sort of a situational play with ATS record, I'm a little skeptical of going against the Colts in this spot.
Oh, see now you've got me all turned around with your crazy stats.
Well,
it's logic,
it's
logic.
We always play the spread here, and a lot of odds makers know that the public's gonna be on New England, so it's mm-hmm. gonna be one of those plays where you might get 1 or 2 points value. Although I don't see that right now. I think if you're a Colts guy and you want to bet the Colts, I think now is your chance. I think this line's just gonna move further south towards the 6 era or 5.5 era by the time kickoff happens.
Really?
Well, yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
I was about to say, everyone thinks New England is going to win, but then again, everyone thought Duke was going to beat the University of Miami in basketball a couple of days ago. Well, we saw what happened there.
And
well,
everyone thought that Oregon was going to beat Ohio State. Too.
Hey,
yeah,
hey, come on. No piling on.
No piling on. The numbers don't lie. The numbers don't lie. The stats don't lie. And it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter unless you're the Denver Broncos who, you know, thank your general manager when he thanks himself, and they kind of keep injuries disclosed, you know, because nobody really knew that Peyton Manning was supposed to be as bad as he was, because I have a feeling that the line, Greg, probably would have moved a little bit in a different direction if people knew. They knew Peyton. If you were watching the games in the previous weeks, you know Peyton Manning wasn't Peyton Manning.
That was,
to
be honest with you,
yeah,
of the four games this weekend, that was my biggest play. That was my play the mortgage on take the Colts plus the points, because even if the Broncos win, it's going to be close, because Peyton, ever since that Rams game, wasn't Peyton.
No.
Yeah. And you see that a lot, too. It's a little gamesmanship there. It's you know, if you do come out and say that Peyton's just not as well as he should be, all the Colts are going to do is bring the house every single time, because you know they're not going to sit back and wait. So kudos to Bud Fox on that. But Bud Fox, sorry, Jesus, I'm already talking about Wall Street back in 1986.
Right now, Bud Fox. It was so annoying and painful to watch, all wrapped up in one. I can't even get on that rant right now. I just can't. I just can't because I'm watching this and I'm like, the Indianapolis Colts defense is not that good. Wow, they're making them look good. Wow, Peyton's really hurt.
I do think that is a misnomer. I think that the Colts defense is a lot better than people think it is. I think people think the Colts defense really sucks. And it's not great, but I think it's at least league average, and I don't think people believe that.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, right now you got overall defense in Indianapolis at 19th in the league, and New England's at 8. So, you know, that's kind of where you know, you guys are right. That's kind of where Indianapolis kind of sits, is that they're just kind of actually more towards the lower of the pack, if anything, in the middle.
Changing the subject on you real quick, because we don't have a whole lot of time. Has there ever been a college basketball season as almost wacky as this one? There is no sure thing unless you're betting straight up and you're taking Kentucky, because even Kentucky has struggled mightily at times. But you're looking at teams, I'm looking like North Carolina, and tonight they beat a completely overmatched NC State team by only two. Duke, obviously, with that huge loss to Miami. UCLA, who was ranked when the season began, and maybe that was a little over-ranking, but still got destroyed. I mean, 7 points in the first half against Kentucky. I do not remember a college basketball season that was more unpredictable than this one.
Yeah, it's pretty – it is unpredictable. I think that a lot of great players are starting to come out of high school, and it's a lot of one-and-done sort of scenarios. I think you're going to see that a lot. I think the teams that are going to do well are the teams that have been together for a period of time. You know, you look at the Wisconsins of the world and teams like that that have seniors and four-year starters on the squad. You're going to see them, and with experience, I think you're going to see them do better. A lot of things about when you get into conference play now college basketball, you know, there's a home court advantage that's pretty big. And as the kids get back from Christmas vacation, you know, that's the new sport. That's the new place to be on Tuesdays and Thursdays and Saturday nights, is to pack the house.
It's funny that you mentioned Wisconsin, because that's how crazy college basketball is this season, that Wisconsin is actually an offensive team and not a defensive team, which is what it used to be a Wisconsin game. You figured that, you know, you bet the under and you're going to be good every time, because those games were usually 48-42 sort of things. But Ryan has them actually playing offense this year. It's that crazy.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I'm not too sure if Kentucky's really good. But, you know, Kentucky's going to have a bullseye on their back the entire season. And, you know, you're already starting to see it. You're starting to see teams really flirting with upsetting these guys. You're probably going to see it by the end of the season. You're probably going to see a loss from Kentucky. It hasn't been done since UNLV did it back in the 90s, early 90s.
Because that year when UNLV did it, they lost in the championship game to Duke. The last undefeated team, I believe, was the 1976 Indiana Hoosiers.
Right. What I meant was the regular season.
Oh, okay.
Exactly. Yeah.
But, because I think a team like Tennessee takes down Kentucky because, A, they're huge rivals. B, Tennessee is better than people think, and I think that Kentucky may take them lightly.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of teams in the SEC could take down Kentucky. It's going to be a team that no one's going to know about, or no one's going to think. And they're going to come out and start hitting threes and playing good D and all the good things it takes to win a game. So, I think that Kentucky probably. I know I was saying that they weren't going to lose. At the end of the day, they still have a lot of inexperience. They have a lot of kids that are wet behind the ears, still learning the offense, still trying to learn to win games. So we'll see what happens.
Unfortunately, I think it's going to be that way every year for Calipari, because he's going to probably lose five guys to the NBA again after this season. So, I think Calipari knows that Kentucky is basically a one-and-done factory.
And he's okay with that. He's been very clear and very open about, you know, being a one-and-done kind of a coach. But,
and
you know, it's done well for him. He's won a national championship and garnered a national championship.
Yeah,
play,
but
so.
I have a problem with that, because the whole idea of going to school is to go to school to get a degree. As important as it is to play basketball or play football, to go there to know that you're only going to be playing there for 1 year, I have an issue with a coach that supports that. I mean, if one or two players want to do it and leave, that's fine. But a coach who supports it, to me, has no business being a coach, because he's not doing anybody any favors.
Yeah, I agree. I completely agree with that comment. I think that it's a bunch of BS, and I think that players should stay at least 2 years. The one and done thing is just stupid, because they don't go to class. All they're doing is just playing their game and getting ready to go to the NBA.
Yeah, basically, and I understand the whole idea of college is to get ready for the next level. But you know, if you're going to be an engineer, you can't be one and done. Even if an engineering company wants to hire you,
the whole idea of college isn't necessarily to get to the next level for those who actually want an education. That's the whole idea of college.
Well, I mean, how'd you like it if you when you go to, you know, you need surgery and your surgeon was such a hot shot that he was one and done.
Right.
Right. Yeah, I don't think that I'd want that, especially if I
exactly.
saw, like, you know, the University of the Bahamas diploma on his wall.
Yeah, right.
A good tan doesn't make up for a whole lot when you're going under the knife.
No, exactly.
No.
But boy, he had a killer crossover.
Right.
Oh, man. That's good. That's good.
You missed us.
Of course he did. Hey,
of course.
I missed us.
Okay, so now we're getting into a lot of college basketball talk. So what is going to be the best play for college basketball this week?
Well, you know, Pam, it's tough. That's tough because, as you know, the lines really don't come out until that morning. So you got to get up early to research these lines and where the value is. You know, I would say to people who are listening with college basketball is I would pay attention to things of like I said, the home court value. You know, look at who brought back returning starters. Look at the guard play. You know, look for mismatches in the guards. You know, one team doesn't have a point guard. A point guard is a quarterback in basketball. I mean, and you got to have a good point guard with every team. If you don't have that, you have confusion at times, and you're going to be on the wrong side of the bet 9 times out of 10 if you're not finding teams that have good point guards. The other thing I look for too is good defenses. You know, one of the best defenses out there in college basketball is Tony Bennett's squad of Virginia Cavaliers. There, he's had a terrific a career there in Virginia. He dated back at Washington State, and his old man helped him get through at Washington State, turned the ranks over to him, and then he moved over to Virginia. But had a great season or great career at Washington State 3 or 4 years. Brought Washington State to the dance two years while he was there, and now he's in Virginia. Great coach, a great players coach. So I look for Virginia to really do well. Not a lot of bettors are going to back up Virginia because they're not a high flashy team. So you're going to get a lot of value, I think, in playing someone like Virginia or playing these defensive teams.
Aren't they number 3 in the country right now?
They're number 2 in the country right now.
Number 2.
They're,
I mean, I know they've been playing some great basketball all year.
Yeah, they're just a really good defensive team, and it's just they wear teams down. They aren't really flashy on offense, but when they have to work that hard on offense to get a basket because the defense is so good, it just makes it difficult to play a good D for the opponent on the other end of the basket to keep the team from scoring. So I like Virginia a lot. Moving forward in this college basketball season.
And I will give you one best bet for the rest of the NBA season, because this is a team that the beginning of the season had killed me and has lately been just killing it for me. The Atlanta Hawks have been absolutely phenomenal this year against the spread. Absolutely phenomenal. They have been killing it, and they did it again tonight. They were 8-point favorite, and they won by, I think, they won by 14 tonight against the Celtics. This Atlanta Hawks team is a lot better than people think, and I don't even think that the odds makers know it yet, because the spreads are awfully low, and they keep killing it.
Okay, well, two things. A, the odds makers will know it, and they will move that line. I agree with what you're saying, Fish, but I disagree with betting on them. You're right. It would be great to bet on them early, but now the word's kind of out. This line, they're going to keep moving the line up until they can't cover no more. I'll tell you a good team you should be betting on right now, a good team as far as spreads go in the NBA, Philadelphia 76ers. Nobody wants them. Nobody cares for them. Why? Because they can't win basketball games. That's fine. We don't need to win the basketball game. We just got to cover the spread. The odds makers know this, and they will add more points to that 76ers line and try to get the public to keep biting on the other opponent. It's a great play. I go back right now and look at against the spreads with the worst team in the NBA, which is the 76ers. You're going to get a lot of 2-to-1 winners. Trust me on that.
I will tell you this. I don't know what the spread was tonight, but I don't think they. I think that the Raptors covered because they won by 16. over the.
I'll just check right now since we're on the.
Yeah. But I was with you for a long time on jumping on the Sixers bandwagon because for that very reason, because they were constantly getting 15, 16, 17 points, and a lot of times they were keeping it within eight. They've actually won seven games this year, which I think is more than Minnesota.
You're right. The Toronto did win by 16, and the spread was 18.
So, oh, it was. So they didn't even cover. There you go. You are spot on.
Oh, so, I mean – you know, but to your point, I'm looking at the Atlanta Hawks right now, and a 5-point spread was a spread, and they won by 16. 14. So,
and I actually had Atlanta -8, and you know, I was still quite happy to take it against the Celtics.
There you go. But what I'm saying is that the Atlanta is hot. And that line is going to show that. And you're going to have to pay a little bit of a premium if you're going to start betting the Hawks from here on out going into the playoffs.
Unfortunately, you are spot on. Because it's too good. All good things must come to an end.
Yeah,
well,
exactly.
you look at this play, too, Fish, at the Atlanta Hawks versus the Celtics. You had 77% of the public was on Atlanta. So – you know, the public's on them. They're like, yeah, we do it. Well, 23%'s on Boston. Well, now this didn't cover if you're on the Boston side. But be careful because this is where you're going to get stung because the teams now know that Atlanta is a team to beat, and they're going to come to play every day to play the Hawks hard. So you're getting a little bit of value from a effort standpoint from the opponent, and you're getting a little bit of value from the odds makers known as well. That's kind of my take on that Hawks set.
I think you're spot on, and maybe I just gave away my family secrets.
Well, no,
I think you're okay.
I just think now that they're done so well, and they're one of the top teams in the league. That to get value as far as betting on this team is gonna be hard. I tend to go for the teams that are really crappy and no one wants, and you get 1 or 2 points of added value, which, if you've been doing this long enough and you have Fish, that 1 or 2 points can mean the world in this game, in this racket.
Absolutely. I can't tell you how many times I've lost because I had to give an extra half a point or an extra point that I really didn't want to give, but I reluctantly did. And it like I said, and we said this, I think on day one we said this, that the Vegas odds makers are in this for a reason. They know what they're doing.
Yeah. I mean, here's a juicy little nugget for you. How about this one? How about the Denver Nuggets, okay, playing at home, and look at someone like the Colorado Buffaloes for the Pac-12. You look at teams that are in high elevation, all right, and playing teams that come from sea level like the Lakers and the Portlands and the Sacramento Kings of the world. Believe it or not, now this is going to sound silly, but it's hard for the body to adjust to an elevation like that.
I don't want to hear this because right now I've hit four of the five teams on my parlay, and the fifth team is Dallas.
No.
I took Dallas +2 in Denver, and they were down 11 at half. And it's only halftime, so I'm not overly concerned, but you're right, and that's what's scaring me right now because that's the fifth team on my five-team parlay.
Okay, well, first of all, you're still down 11, so don't worry. It's 8 minutes to go in the third quarter, so you're still down 11, but – but I'm saying that those are kind of some little fun little angles to play on some of these games when they get into just things like that you don't really think of. It's tough for players to adapt to that kind of stuff and it's like in college
basketball, and I can't think of if it's New Mexico or New Mexico State, whichever one plays at the Pit. You always want to take them at home because that is one of the toughest college basketball venues to win in.
Yes, absolutely. It's very tough. It's in a pit, so everything echoes off the stands and whatnot. So it's very hard. I got to get you off these parlays. I do not like you betting these parlays. Those are tough. The tough games. The tough tickets to cash in.
They are, but I'm, like I said, I've hit the Pelicans, the Hawks, the Spurs. I have the Wizards plus six, and they were up by like two or four with a minute to go. So I'm pretty much counting the Wizards. So all that's left for me is the Mavs plus two. The Mavs are a better team than the Nuggets. But you're right, I wasn't thinking about the altitude, and I should have been, and that's going to cause me a problem.
Well, see, it's a 16 parlay, correct?
Five team.
It's a five-team parlay, so you're going to go four. You're going to go 4 for 5. If Dallas loses, you're going to go 4 for 5. That's a great night. 3 for 5 is a great night in this racket. 3 for 5 is a great night.
I'm going to go 4 for 5 and have nothing to show for it.
And have nothing to show for it. And I know that Nuggets out there have only put $10 to win. Whatever it is, $160 or whatever. But there's a reason why.
Actually, this was 12. This was actually 12 to win 313.
There you go. So there's that dangling the carrot in front of you, because it's just little money to win big money. But there's a reason why they have those sort of odds, because the chances of you going 5 for 5, pretty hard to do.
And it's now a 13-point Nuggets lead, by the way. Thank you very much.
Well, now, you know as well as anybody that the NBA goes in spurts. They're going to be a 15-0 run by Dallas in a matter of
time. Oh, absolutely. That's why I'm not even really paying attention to that game yet. And that is the last game of the five.
And your line was minus two? You got to give
plus,
you
no, plus two. I got the Mavs plus two. If it was minus two, I might not have taken them. But I thought the Mavs getting 2 points, this is a great Mavericks team.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, well,
and we'll about getting, you know, fish off of these parlays.
What's that?
We'll have to talk off of my parlays.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I don't know if I'm going to be able to do that with him, but
maybe if we double team him, then maybe it can happen. We'll have to work on that, Greg.
The problem is, he'll go back just doing straight bets, and he'll be all pissed because he missed. He didn't win a game or something, so he'll blame us, Pamela. So we don't want that either.
Yeah, because what'll happen is I'll have one night where I'm 6 for 6 on straight bets, and said, "See, if I would have parlayed it, I'd be loaded."
Yeah, I know, but if you went 6 for 6 and you're playing $50 a pop, you're going to be at that anyway.
That's a good point.
See, there you go. Greg, thank you so much for coming on with us. And, of course, we look forward to talking to you next week. We'll have all the NFL, you know, we'll have the Super Bowl matchup set up, and we'll kind of get a little bit into that.
And we'll talk about a lot of prop bets, because that's something I want to talk to you about next week, is all the prop bets for the Super Bowl.
Oh boy, prop bets and parlays! I can't wait for next week.
Oh, I'm not a big prop bet guy. I'm not a big prop bet guy, but they're always fun to talk about.
Well, yeah. I mean, how many times are you going to see Kim Kardashian do whatever she's going to do in the stands?
Yeah,
my
favorites are usually, you know, more points by Kobe Bryant or rushing yards by Eddie Lacy.
Yeah, you know what one. Be real quick, and I gotta get going. But you know what prop bet has actually broken the bank for sports books in the last 2 years, 2 years in a row. You know what it is, Fish or Pan?
Over under
no?
The length of time of the national anthem.
Nope.
Coin flip.
A safety in the game, and
ooh.
It is huge odds for that to happen, because it didn't happen very often, and it's happened 2 years in a row in the Super Bowl. And it paid like 301. It was humongous.
I look forward to this discussion next week. Greg,
a
fantastic week.
It's going to be definitely fun.
It always is.
Greg, thank you so much,
and we will talk to you next week.
Take care, Greg.
Talk to you later.
Bye. And, of course, that is our Mo Money guy, Greg Smith. He always gives us the best tips on how to wisely spend our extra cash and try to get a little more in return.
Thanks for that little dig right there, the wisely. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
And before we say goodbye this week, I wanted to tell everybody the big guest we have next week. See what I did there? Big guest.
Yeah, I see what you did there, because next week, Fish, our guest is 6'8", 350 pounds. Tyrus is a lone superstar destroyer. And, of course, we're talking about who, Fish?
Brodus Clay, my friends, former WWE and current TNA star.
Yes, Absolutely. He is going to be joining us next week, and we look forward to talking some wrestling with him. I'm kind of excited to have him on. I think he's going to be the biggest guest that we have on our show.
We've had some ex NFL players, so that could be pretty big.
That's
too.
True.
You know, especially when they retire, they kind of let themselves go. I hear that JJ Burden is pretty hit. No, I'm kidding. JJ, JJ, if you're listening, I'm kidding. I kid. Please don't come and find me.
Of course, we appreciate everybody that listens. And because we could not do the show without you, we want to thank our sponsors, Trendsetter to Trendsetter Magazine, and, of course, the people at Fansetters Magazine and Latino Trendsetters.
Olé!
And
I also
want
to thank, obviously,
the
special...
I am going to say that, and you're not going to say anything, and I'm just going to be like, are you okay?
Exactly. And special thanks to, of course, Russell Baxter, Greg Smith, and the fantastic, amazing Casey Stern, who I'm going to keep pushing up because, you know, it's baseball, and you all know how I feel about baseball.
We do.
Thank you all so very much. You all have yourselves a phenomenal week. And remember, next week, right back here, same bat time, same bat channel.
Absolutely. Take care, everybody. Have a good week.
Have a good week, everyone.